Blog Talk Radio.
Now it's time for some mind, body, and soul food with host Tanya Parker. Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to Mind, Body, and Soul Food. I am your host, Tanya Parker, here to dish up some deliciously delectable, consciousness-raising creations for your mind, body, and soul. I'd like to give a big thank you to the wonderful Gay Adegbolola, who brought us in yet again with her Hungry Woman Blues. And I hear Gay will be in the band with my friend Leah Gilmore on Leah's next CD, Classically Blue, live at the UB Blake Center. So kudos to the both of them. And so this Hungry Woman Blues, and I like to say Hungry Woman, Hungry Man Blues, hopefully we have the cure for that on this show, where on second Sundays at 6, we serve up a big dish on natural and holistic healing to feed your mind, body, and soul. Now, let me start off tonight by sharing a little bit about myself. Spirit has called me to work within my practice and ministry, Mind, Body, and Spirit Works, to facilitate expression of one's highest self through divinely inspired and assisted holistic healing, teaching, coaching, and writing services. Now, my holistic table has served up so many different offerings over the past few decades, it's hard to keep it straight in my own head. And one of them has been Mind, Body, and Soul Food, which for the past 3+ years has provided an opportunity each month to feed our listeners with mind, body, and soul nourishing information as we give voice to the vision of truly gifted holistic healers and light workers and authors who, if they're writing about holistic health and healing, they are definitely considered light workers. So a big thank you to all of you listeners who support and sustain this show. We have over 58,000 listens to date, and we continue to grow. Also, thank you specifically to those who tuned in last month when we had our major glitches going on. I'm not sure what Spirit was up to, but it was having a big joke with me and our wonderful guest, Angelica Rose, as she took us on a journey from human consciousness to spiritual oneness and took us on a journey from Blog Talk somehow hanging up on her and hanging up on me and us having to restart the show a half hour later. So please check out parts 1 and 2 on demand if you haven't already. Tonight, we're in for another treat. Author Norman Van Aken wrote in the foreword of the book, Feeding the Hungry Ghost, that its author, our guest, Ellen Kanner, is like having an elfin, white, Jewish vegan Oprah whispering in your ear that it's going to be more than okay, honey. It's going to be magical. And tonight you'll get to hear about how magical the book is. So without further ado, I'd like to extend a warm mind, body, and soul food welcome to chef author Ellen Kanner. Welcome, Ellen.
Yay. Hi, Tanya. I'm so glad to be here.
It's wonderful to have you. You just exude such wonderful energy. It's been a joy just the few minutes that we've been on the phone together. I would love for you to share with my listeners who you are and what do you serve at your healing table?
I am the Huffington Post Meatless Monday blogger. I am the vegan who wants to invite everyone to the table. I think, you know, we get so crazy about food. It's gotten really far from the sitting down and eating part. You know, it gets so political. It's this, it's that. It's really, to me, the few times in the day where we can take a breath and be with ourselves, with each other, and really appreciate where our food came from. And so, you know, the name of your show, Mind, Body, and Soul Food, wow, that's really that's really resonant and magical for me.
Wonderful. Well, I am glad. And I think in food terms all the time, so I certainly can relate to you as I've been reading your book. And the title is pretty cool. It's quite intriguing. And I couldn't wait to break open the cover to find out, what do you mean by feeding the hungry ghost?
It's a Tao concept. I lived in Asia for a time, and I found out that there are hungry ghost festivals. And what they are ways to soothe spirits who were so hungry and clutchy and needy. They were that way even after they died. I mean, they would just sort of hang around and haunt you. So if you want to make hungry ghosts go away, you have to show them compassion. You have to show them care by prayer and by food offerings. And I'm thinking, wow, that works for humans, too. That works for us now. Because we're also hungry. And, you know, yes, for food, but also for meaning and healing and connection. And, you know, so much is out there. Let's just start with our next meal. This is where, you know, we can just sort of center ourselves, nourish ourselves, and get the energy we need to go forward.
I love that concept.
I subtitled the book Life, Faith, and What to Eat for Dinner, because it is all integral.
And usually I'm thinking about that probably by lunchtime. What am I eating for dinner? Right as I'm eating lunch. Now, you know, in the past few years, there's been a title that has been out there. And, of course, once you put Julia Roberts in the movie, it just takes off. But is your book anything like Eat, Pray, Love? Because that certainly had a lot of food types of references there.
Well, let's say that a lot of the same stuff is on the menu. we are all looking for that kind of joy in life. And it would be really nice to be played by Julia Roberts and go to exotic locales. But with Feeding the Hungry Ghost, I'm trying to give you that joy and that connection, because you are magnificent who you are right now. You don't have to be anyone else. You don't have to go to exotic locales. You don't have to deal with airport security. You can do it yourself. I give what I call gentle nudges that help you connect with food, with how it's grown, with the planet that brought it to you, with who we share it with. These are things that really eat, pray, love. That's what that is.
That's a good point. And I loved the social consciousness, the spiritual consciousness that was present in your book. A lot of things that people don't even think about as they're eating, as they're perhaps driving through McDonald's or another fast food line, and as they're heating up something that's prepackaged, processed to the nth degree. What goes behind the food? How did it get here? How is it serving the planet? How is it serving us? And I like that with this book, it is a cookbook, because you have wonderful recipes, but also that self-help component is there. But the piece that I like that really brings it alive for me is that it's also a memoir. And you have such rich memories. And if you could share one of them, it just really warmed my heart to read about your grandmother.
Oh, well, she was a huge force. I was just thinking about her right before I called in. She was a great grandmother, but not, you know, your typical sweet, soft kind.
Right, with the huge bosom, who baked you cookies and smelled like gardenias or something.
No, I mean, I think
that's my concept
of grandmother to have. She liked she smoked and drank and hung out with the girls even when they were in their 70s and 80s. But she was an extremely liberating force for me. Anything, like, she was great at empowering me. And especially in the kitchen, because she was, and that's where all the action was happening when I was a kid. You know, the kitchen would be hot and bustling, and she'd be there with her friends getting meals ready and gossiping. And I'm thinking, wow, this is home base central. This is where it's at. So she was a great force for me.
And she introduced you to some wonderful, wonderful foods, which the book goes into detail about. And some of them I was nodding my head and say, oh, yeah, yeah. And others it's like, wow, I've never heard of that. I need to look that up. Or I might want to try that one day. So thank you for inspiring me in that way as well.
Oh, I'm glad. I mean, if you don't have a Marcella in your life, which I did, at least you can have me. And believe me, I love to guide people to great food. I think that's a really magical connection.
And, you know, just having said that, I think about how I grew up. I am a country girl. I am very proud of being a country girl. And some of the things that we may have seen go across our table, let's see, anything from muskrat, and just seeing this fried creature, just the whole creature, head and all, sitting with the little paws perked up on a platter. Just the thought of it now, you know, just makes me shiver. And so we had muskrat and things like chitlins, not chitterlings, we call them chitlins, and pig's feet, pig ears, pig tail, every part of the pig, etc. And I don't eat any of it today, but we pretty much, you know, had a lot of the same things, and I wasn't exposed at a young age to a variety, so I can appreciate the experiences you had with a family member who did expose you.
And I am really kind of impressed by what you grew up with. I mean, now we talk, you know, food critics talk about the nose-to-tail experience. You had that. I mean, you knew where your food was coming from. You had a connection to it. And I understand you not wanting to eat muskrat. I understand you kind of looking at it at the time and going, huh. But your family valued every bit of it. Nothing was wasted. And that's a lesson we could use today.
Yes, it's a very different culture that we live in when it comes to food and how we make use of it. You're correct. Nothing was wasted. Nothing was wasted. Now, you know, I ate a lot of meat back then, and by all means, I am not vegetarian. Even though I eat a lot of vegetarian meals, I have a lot of vegetarian days, and periodically I may eat vegan. These recipes in the book are all vegan. And what if you're not vegan?
I don't think you have to be. As I say, I'm the vegan who wants to invite everyone to the table. And what better way with great food, which is what I want these recipes to be first and foremost. We can get scared off by words, and vegan is a strange one. A lot of people pronounce it vegan, like we come from the planet Vega. We come in peace. It just means food that's plant-based and feeds you without hurting an animal. And then you get to the whole point about being meatless. We think, you know, oh, you're taking something away from me. My plate is going to be less something. It's going to be with a little less cruelty, but no one's asking you to give up anything. It's about winning. It's about gaining a plate rich with beautiful produce, healthy with beans and whole grains. And you know, it's also, being vegan is proven to add years to your life. That's a big add. And wow, just think of the food. If I say I'm going to ask you to eat vegan, I've seen that look before. People kind of get that flash of panic in the eyes.
yes, I've seen that look.
Uh-huh. But what if you say, okay, you know what? I've got some really terrific chili-sparked Indian curry that I've been making all afternoon. I've got an Asian stir-fry that's got bright bits of ginger in it. I've got some really soothing, long-simmering soups. I've got some like really creamy, luscious bean dips and crusty bread. I've got this whole grain pilaf with bright greens and herbs, and it's warm with spices and crunchy with nuts. These recipes are all in my book. They're great.
Yeah.
They're global. They just happen to be plant-based. So what's not
and
to love?
What's not to love, especially the way you describe them. And reading your book, it's a real sensual experience. It's almost, I don't smoke, but I wanted to have a cigarette after reading your descriptions.
Wow, am I flattered. But, you know, I mean it. I cook and I write to seduce, because if we were aware how fantastic simple food can be, yeah, it's a real sexy experience.
Yeah, it is. It is. Wow. Now, you didn't grow up vegan, however, correct? Why did you give up meat?
I gave up meat when I was 13 because I loved animals, and I loved animals since I was really little. But then, a chicken on a plate versus a chicken running around outside, I thought, they look different, but I know they're the same thing. And I couldn't do that anymore. I realize that's a real hard call for a lot of people to come to. And that's why I would rather encourage you to eat more vegetables. And, you know, dial down the meat. No one's saying you have to give it up overnight. I want to encourage and coax.
Yes. And, you know, that's a hard decision. You were 13. That's very young. And I don't know if you have encountered this, but I certainly have. More and more young people, teenagers, and even younger, who are making that choice that they don't want to eat meat anymore for whatever reason. And I've just been shocked, but actually I've been pleased about it.
I'm
impressed.
Me too. And in fact, my Meatless Monday post that's going up tomorrow is about an 11-year-old vegan who kind of knocked his family for a loop. But he said, you know what, it's about treatment of animals for me, and anything that's going to hurt another living creature, I don't want any part of it. I'm thinking, wow, that, you know, you have it going on way younger than I did.
Yeah. I mean, it took me into my 30s before I gave up pork and beef, and into my 40s before I started doing more of the meat on the side, just less meat. And now as I approach, as I'm closer to 50, just realizing
I can
go
younger than springtime.
Thank you for that. You know, it's like, wow, you know, I can go for weeks, I can go for days without eating meat, and I'm perfectly fine. I certainly know at this point multiple protein sources, so that can't be my excuse. And I certainly feel better for it. And I know recently my weight has definitely reflected that practice. So, you know, I'm thankful for those particular reasons.
Oh, yeah. As I say, it shouldn't have to be a hardship. It can be a great big pleasure.
But
tonight,
you know,
I'm having a beet and arugula salad with a date chili vinaigrette, brown rice with some gorgeous fresh mushrooms I got from the farmer's market. Like, wow, okay, that sounds pretty good to me.
Wow, you had me at mushrooms. That's all it takes. Wow, that sounds pretty amazing. How do you come up with these recipes?
I always start with what's in season, or what's going on at my local farmer's market or a community shared agriculture program. I'm inspired by produce. You know, it talks to me. It'll say, oh, you know what? Like a little Mediterranean something with some olive oil and lemon, that's really all I need. or if I use up bits and bobs in the refrigerator, if I've got a bunch of tomatoes that want to be used up, that can go into something else too.
But that, to me, that is art. When you can look in your refrigerator and your cupboard, or go out to your garden for those who have a garden, and just create this masterpiece of food, I mean, that is one of my favorite activities, I have to say.
Well, I would like to think it's a masterpiece, but I also think everyone has the ability to do this. It's like what we were saying before with your upbringing, using every bit of what you've got. It's artistry. It's also honoring where your food comes from. You know, up to a third, I've heard up to a half of the food in the planet is wasted. Oh, we can't afford to do that, people. There's too many of us and too many people who are hungry.
Yes, that's a
real basic thing.
You know, I do remember watching some, I love these food reality shows, like on the Food Network, et cetera, and there was one where two teams of chefs were competing with each other, and they had to make these various meals using wasted food. And it was shocking to me to see what beauty they created with all of this food that was going to be thrown out. Otherwise, I did not realize we wasted so much.
I'm afraid we do. It's because, you know, we want our plates to be beautiful, perfect, magnificent. You know, a slightly misshapen apple is not going to hurt anyone. I have done prep work in commercial kitchens, but I could tell really early on I was not going to make a go at it. There's one Miami chef, I'm not going to name names, this person is just what the chef can do in the kitchen knocks me out. But when I was doing some veg prep, the chef said, you're cutting the tomatoes too thin. People want bigger slices. I was trying to make sure I used all of it. And I'm thinking, okay, I understand where you're coming from, and I know that your plates look beautiful. I know the food looks beautiful. I just don't want to throw this stuff out. And that was a real that was a real turning point for me.
Well, you know, with this society that we live in now, Ellen, we have everything is fast-paced. Everything needs to be done now. People have these time squeezes that are happening, and they just feel that they just don't have the time to cook. And what if that is the case for some people? What advice do you have?
I agree. We are all stretched so thin. You know, multitasking, we can't get enough done fast enough. But you know what? You probably have 10 minutes. I have a recipe in Feeding the Hungry Ghost called 10-Minute Pasta. I also call it Recipe for Disaster because I created it after a hurricane when I didn't even have any power. And it's sort of like what we were talking about before. It's using up everything you've got, and it only takes 10 minutes. As with other recipes in the book, it makes multiple servings. It keeps in the fridge, or you can freeze small portions of it and enjoy it when you're ready. That is healthy, fast food that you've made yourself. I believe in making many meals at a shot and then getting everybody into the act. You know, you eat together, I hope, so cook together. Get everyone in the kitchen. Get your spouse, get your kids. We can all take a greater part in our food choices. Or, you know, have a weekly potluck with your friends. I have a friend who lives a mile away, and I love her, but she's a chronic texter. And, you know, after the 20th text, I say, girl, get your butt over here, because I'll make you lunch. It's much easier. It's something we've really gotten out of the habit of. But a shared meal, really, it just changes you. It's a terrific reboot.
I have memories of being in college my senior year, and we had a Sunday supper club. And it was wonderful. We took turns going to the different dorm rooms or dorm apartments each Sunday, and the host was responsible for the meal. And there were times when I was more of an accomplished cook at the time, having grown up, you know, under my mother's tutelage and my aunt's tutelage. So I might make something a little more substantial. But then my college roommate at the time, she wasn't as experienced, and she often would have her tuna mac, and it was perfectly okay because somebody else was cooking for us, and we were gathered together communing. That was what the priority was.
It really tastes better when you share it. I believe that. There's something really terrific about the shared meal. I mean, it's even mentioned in the Bible that they broke bread together and they were happy. We're not talking about going to some fancy New York restaurant and being happy. We're talking about real basic foodstuffs. And when they're shared, they're greater that way.
I agree. I was telling you a little bit before the show started about my weekend. I was out on the land, as we call it, at a retreat for the D.C. Rape Crisis Center, and it was a sweat lodge weekend. And so for the past 3 years, I've been going to support the women there, and I do the cooking. And so Ellen, I would never call myself a chef, but I've done personal chef work in the past. I've done some conscious catering, as I call it, in the past. So it's always a challenge going out to have all of these women who are there for healing. There were over 20 women. And, of course, everyone has some sort of different dietary preference. And so I have to make sure that I'm cooking. I have something for the vegans and vegetarians, for the raw foodies, for the gluten-free folks, and for people who like meat. And knowing that they will be coming out of this sweat experience after hours of going through this process, and that they will have this voracious appetite. So it's always such a pleasure to serve them. And I think it is the catering job that I do, and it's the only one that I continue to do after several years. It's the only one I do. But there is so much gratitude pouring forth from them, and they're sitting together after their experience, crammed in this little lodge, sweating with all of this heat, and here they're now breaking bread together, and there's always something for everyone. So, you know, I could see that, and I get to sit down and eat with them too, so it's amazing.
I love that you told me that. I mean, you are nourishing these women in such a primal way. I think that's beautiful.
Thank you. It's just such a pleasure to do that. And I love cooking. And I really look forward to using some of your recipes. And I have to tell you, you probably get this question all the time, Ellen, because I've gotten it from people when I've tried to educate them or encourage them about being more conscious about their eating and cooking practices and buying healthy food. And I always hear this: isn't healthy food expensive? You know, how do you counter that? What do you say to that?
Boy, that's a myth I would love to put to bed. Whole healthy food is not expensive. When you were in college, unless you were, you know, someone was totally supplementing your income, you were probably cooking great food on very little money. I know I did.
Yes.
Look, I'm cheap. I'll come out and say it. And my husband will be glad to tell you, too.
Frugal. We call it frugal, Ellen.
Sounds nicer that way. But dried beans, whole grains, produce in season, it's always cheap. I won't spend a fortune on arcane ingredients or spend a lot of time hunting down strange things, and I won't expect anyone else to do it either. But the foods, the main ingredients in my book are whole grains, the old kind, you know, with the really great husk, dried beans, all the stuff which keeps in your pantry, and fresh produce. It's the food that has sustained cultures for millennia. I mean, it's at the core of Indian, Moroccan, Middle Eastern, Mediterranean, African cuisines. It sustained us as cultures then. It still does. Some processed food, I'm not so sure about that. The foods I'm talking about are cheap. Processed food isn't necessarily, and it also comes with a lot of hidden costs, costs to your health. Most are loaded with sugar, fat, and salt, and it's that way for a reason, because you take that stuff out, and the food is shelf-friendly, but it does not taste very good. And it's got, like, weird chemical additives, and my feeling is if you don't know what it is or how to pronounce it, you shouldn't be eating it.
Amen. Amen. I remember reading in your book you were talking about propylene glycol, which you see and it as an ingredient in various food stuff. And
food stuff is a good word. It's sort of like not quite
Yeah,
food.
I was about to say, I said food stuff. I'm not quite sure if that's the correct word for it.
It's stuff, all right.
Yeah,
it's
but
also
you can,
an antifreeze. Oh, please.
Yes. Yes. Oh, wow. You know, Ellen, I want to pause right here just in case anyone wants to call in with questions. We have Ellen Canner on the line. She is a chef and author of Feeding the Hungry Ghost, Life, Faith, and What to Eat for Dinner. The call-in number is 917-889-7806. Again, that's 917-889-7806. If you call in, please follow the instructions to speak with the host. I think what that means is press 1, and that will let me know that you have a question or a comment and you would like to speak with Ellen. But in the meantime, Ellen, I wanted to talk a little bit more about your Huffington Post column. Now, what do they call it? The Huff Post? How do you shorten that? I can't remember the cool way of saying Huffington Post.
You did it, girl. It's Huff Post, and I've been I've been the Meatless Monday blogger for 4 years, which I think is wonderful. I have survived three editors of the Green Page. I remember the first one when I started. She was the one who said, "You know, you want to do this?" And I said, "Yeah, I absolutely do, because I love writing about food." And about the first month in, she said, "Well, you know, you've gotten some great responses, and I really love what you're writing, but how long do you think you can talk about eating less meat?" Oh, well, we're into the fourth year now. I never run out of things to say or fabulous people to interview. Food, Tanya, as you know, it lets us talk about everything. It lets us talk about culture. It lets us talk about education, the environment, food policy, health. I think of food as being subversive in that way. It allows us to talk about so many things that affect us in deep, primal ways that we don't always think about. So,
gotcha,
yeah, I could definitely keep this going.
Very good. Well, 4 years certainly says the proof is in the pudding. Ha, 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 pun intended. Do you feel a sense of responsibility as a food writer?
Yeah, very much so. You know, we were talking before about how much we waste our food. I think that's untenable in this age. There was a recent, last week, in fact, the USDA came out with this study that said, I think it's 46 million Americans experienced food insecurity last year, which is the nice official way of saying people were going without food. They didn't know where their next meal was coming from.
Oh, you know, wow.
Yeah, you know, we are a nation of great potential and great wealth, and that is unacceptable to me. So I really do want us to value our food. I want us to value ourselves. I mean, I think, gosh, the people I meet are so exciting, and people are so passionate about making those connections. So really, next time you know, by the time we're done with this show, I hope everyone's going to be really hungry. I know I am. So just think about where you're sourcing your food. The one thing you can do that's going to make a huge difference in your life and in your outlook is less processed, more produce. That's something we can all do.
Okay, and, you know, I love alliteration.
So
anytime I show a second Sundays at 6, right, then, you know, less processed, more produce. That's easy to remember. Easy to remember. We, you know, we have a caller, Ellen, so I wanted to pause to acknowledge the caller in the 202 area code. Caller, you're live on the air with Ellen Canner.
Is it
Hello, are you there, caller? I'm
yes,
talking
can you hear
to
me?
You. I can hear you. Can you tell us your name, please?
Yes, my name is Karen Fletcher, and I'm in your class.
Ah, you know, I forgot school is back in, and so some of my
yes,
students are listening in, Ellen.
Oh, wow.
Oh, they get
nice
extra
to meet
credit.
You, Ms. Karen.
Yeah, I was going to say, give the girl an A.
Okay, thank you. How would someone transition to become a vegan? What would I do? Would I stop eating stuff right away, or how would I do that?
Oh, Karen, you're going to – some of it's going to have to be knowing yourself. This 11-year-old vegan I'm talking about in Huffington Post tomorrow, he gave it up overnight. I think it's easier to just sort of dial it down a little bit. Try going without meat, you know, for lunch tomorrow. Tomorrow's Meatless Monday. It's a great way to start.
Oh, okay.
I don't ever want anyone to feel deprived. Eat more
because
whole
grains.
I
don't eat a lot of meat now, but I
Good
do.
Girl.
Sometimes I like barbecue ribs, and sometimes I like pork chops. But I eat a lot of seafood. Now, is that bad?
Well, you don't say good or bad.
Okay.
if you put more focus on vegetables and also on how you feel.
Okay.
You got it going on, girl. I just want you to be the best you can be.
Okay.
And I think a good diet can do that for you.
Oh, okay, because I'm in a nutrition class, too.
Wow. Good for you. I am so impressed.
Yeah. And
that
I'm
should
glad
give you
I
a great
in
opportunity.
And was listening.
I'm glad you called in, too.
Thank you
and
so
thank
much for
you,
calling,
and I'm
gonna
get,
Karen.
I'm going to get that book.
Thank you. Fantastic.
Okay, and thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Karen.
Okay, and...
All right.
Oh, she's
and that
great
was
fun.
Yes, that's wonderful. You're inspiring someone. That's really good. That's really good. You know, it's interesting how she asked about whether it was good or bad, and we do put judgment on ourselves, and so I like what you said about see how you feel, because I think sometimes we don't pay attention to the relationship between what we put in our bodies and how we feel afterwards. We may think, oh, I'm just coming down with the cold again, but not realizing that perhaps this food that I'm eating is somehow suppressing my immune function and I'm catching colds or I'm prone to allergies or I seem to have a lot of stomach upsets and that link isn't there.
It's true, and I'm sure a lot of processed food manufacturers are very happy about that. But there is a real cause and effect relationship between what we put in our bodies and how we feel. I mean, gosh, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, think about taking medicine. There are a whole list of potential side effects. We don't even think about that when we eat dinner. And what we eat can have wonderful side effects for us. I know someone who went vegan in his 50s had not really planned to, just did. And he said 3 days into it, he felt like he had gotten a brain transfusion, that his head was clear, and he hadn't even realized he'd been feeling fuzzy and tired. It's profound.
It is profound. And, you know, there's a lot going on out there now about food and mood and food and how it impacts our concentration. So it's not just the physical consequences, positive or negative, of eating, but it's impacting our mental and emotional health as well.
Absolutely, and our energy levels. You know, Karen was saying that she likes to eat meat now and again. My husband does too. He eats a lot less of it than he used to. And mm-hmm. some days, you know, he'll have a burger lunch with the guys and he'll come home and he'll say, man, it just wiped my energy this afternoon. Mm. And, you know, I have to, you know, not do the told you so strut. when you are aware of how you feel after what you eat, that kind of causal relationship, yeah, it really, your body will tell you to do the right thing.
Yes, yes. Once again, we are on the air with Ellen Canner, author of Feeding the Hungry Ghost, Life, Faith, and What to Eat for Dinner. If you have a question for Ellen or just want to make a comment, please call in 917-889-7806. Press 1 to speak with the host, and we will put you live on the air. And I guarantee if you have a question, she'll have an answer, at least one. Oh, my goodness. Now, you talk in your book a lot about the cultural and religious aspect of food. You know, and some people just kind of stop at the thought of, well, as long as it's good, as long as it's delicious, isn't that good enough? Why do we even have to consider culture and religion when it comes to food?
Because it plays a deeper part of nourishing us than I think most of us realize. Just think of Thanksgiving or Christmas. There are dishes that, you know, have to appear on the table, or the holiday just isn't the holiday. There is a recipe I have in my book for harira, which is a vegetable soup made at Ramadan. Well, I make it a vegetable soup. Quite often it has meat in it. Mine does not. That is an integral part of Ramadan. And it's what people eat at the end of the day to nourish themselves after they've been fasting all day. And I love thinking that centuries of women have been making this soup, and here I'm making a version of it too. It just really amps up the pleasure for me. As simple a dish as it is, knowing a connection to it makes it taste better. That it seasons the food.
I can understand that. I'm thinking about various holidays. Now, for me, I grew up in the Christian tradition, and so my family observes Easter. And so for some reason, of all the various holidays, even though I am more interfaith now, that is my holiday in which I invite my family. And there are certain foods that somehow have become part of the tradition of Easter. And one of them, of course, is deviled eggs. Now, that is not vegan. But, you know, when you think of Easter, or when we think of Easter, we think of eggs and spring. And I love the whole irony of, you know, that coming from originally a pagan belief. And we, you know,
well, you
still
know, we always borrow the good stuff. There's nothing wrong with that.
I like that thought. I like that thought. And so somehow we've gotten also into the Cornish hens, you know, and you think about the little chicks, those little peeps. I'm sorry, I'm just such a poor Easter candy person. Those little marshmallowy things just don't turn me on. But making Cornish hens with various recipes each year for my family, they've come to expect it. It's part of the tradition, just like turkey and stuffing and mashed potatoes is the same tradition for some people at Thanksgiving. And so, yeah, I can relate to certain holidays. You just expect to see some things. And it's hard when you change eating. I remember ham is a traditional Thanksgiving food for my family. And when I gave up eating pork years ago, I still would eat ham at Thanksgiving because it was there and it was part of the tradition. And it took me some years to just stop eating the ham. Sort of like Karen was saying, you know, she'll periodically eat some ribs or a pork chop or something. That's what I did with the ham until I didn't need to. What do you think about the folks who are seeking to emulate these holiday times, but they may be eating vegan now, and so they may get some sort of tofu turkey or something that mimics the original food, and I'm curious about your opinion about that.
I think if you are looking to transition and it is going to make things easier for you, it's sort of like training wheels. It's a good step, but I also a celery isn't going to be a turkey. I think celery is magnificent in its own right, and it shouldn't have to try and masquerade as what it's not. And you know, having gone so long without eating meat, the idea of anything trying to be it, I'm not interested. That's for me.
Right.
If it works for you, I think that's fantastic. I think anything that doesn't hurt another animal is a great thing. We do get feelings and family and faith and food all just sort of like one big knot, especially
at
the holidays.
See, you're giving me the alliteration again. Families and feeling and faith and food. I love that. Okay, I'm sorry. Continue.
Okay, say your family gives you grief because you try and do Thanksgiving without a turkey, and they say, you know, you don't love us. This is not, you know, this is weird. This is like this great vegetable stuffing, but there's no bird to put it in. what you're there for, well, and this may take a couple years before it sinks in with everyone, you are there to share a meal with love. That meal and that love come from you. The turkey didn't have anything to do with it.
And what just came up for me was a vision.
Ooh.
And no judgment here, but a vision of holiday meals that I may have partaken of. And everyone will jump on the food when it's done, make plates, and then go off to separate corners, maybe to watch a football game or to do whatever. But the communal nature, the actual gathering and interacting with the family and spending some time maybe expressing the faith piece, that may have been lost somewhere in the midst of it. And so I like the idea of expressing the love with the food. That's pretty powerful.
It is, and it's hard to do. I mean, the pilgrims didn't have television, so maybe it was a little easier for them. I know that I'm sure it was for you when you were feeding these women at the sweat lodge, I know when I'm trying to get 30 people fed at Thanksgiving, I don't always have time to, you know, to express my love for everyone. It's like, oh, we're out of sweet potatoes. Hang on a sec. I'll be right back. I think it is important to be as present as you can be. I ain't a saint, but I really do try and be present. I also try and get my family involved, too, so that we all feel a part of this.
I hear
that. As you
say,
a work in progress.
Definitely a work in progress. Now, if you were to throw your ideal dinner party, I want to know who would be the guest at your table and what would be on the menu.
Okay, here's where I get wacky, but this is also real important to me.
Okay.
You know, I was just talking about trying to feed 30 people.
Mm-hmm.
My ideal dinner party is everyone. Everyone in the whole world, all 7 million of us, because we all deserve to be nourished and respected and to share a meal together. I would probably need to start sourcing ingredients now.
yes.
But it would be the basic foods that have always sustained us. You know, a great big pots and pots of whole grains and a rich bean stew and whatever green is in season. That is really going to stretch and feed all of us. And because we are all sharing it together, it's going to be delicious.
Mmm. That sounds wonderful. Well, you certainly are ambitious. Oh, wow. Well, I'm curious as to, do you have any tour dates that are coming up? I happen to be located in the D.C. metro area, but are you traveling around doing any signings, readings, talks where we might catch you?
I'm not going to do it this year, but I'm really hoping next year I'm at D.C. Veg Fest, which I know is coming up in later this month. I've got some Miami tour dates then, so I'm not going to be able to see you then. But I have so many great friends in D.C. Compassion Over Killing is located there. There's some great animal rights organizations. And some great food. Got to get up there.
Well, we certainly do have listeners in the Miami area, I am quite sure of. So if they can stay tuned and catch you, that would just be wonderful, I'm sure. But people don't have to necessarily see you in person to benefit from your book. So how can folks follow up and contact you to dine at your healing table? I'm not saying your dinner table because they might want to, including ordering the book, Feeding the Hungry Ghost, Life, Faith, and What to Eat for Dinner.
It should be at your favorite indie bookstore, your favorite chain at Amazon and Barnes & Noble and IndieBound. And check out my website. It's www.ellen-ink, like the stuff that runs, ellenink.com, and I'd love to keep this conversation going. That's terrific.
Wonderful. Now, I'm curious, if you play favorites, what's your favorite recipe in the book?
I don't play favorites. In fact, I'm extremely fickle. The joke around here is that my husband and I have been married over 20 years, and he's never eaten the same meal twice because I am very geared to what's fresh and in season. And things are always a little bit different. Maybe I'll the beet salad recipe I've made tonight will be similar to one I've made before, but the dates will be a little different or I'll be a little different. So... I like to mix things up.
Thank you, like... Ellen, for that. No, I just wanted, no, I wanted to say thank you because you just normalized me, because I can't seem to replicate a recipe. That all of those different factors come in, and so there's something that's going to be different each time. So thank you. I got confirmation. I needed that.
Well, I'm glad I could provide it. I'm so impressed by what you do, though. And I can't wait to sometime be in D.C., and I think we have to cook together and laugh together. I think that's going to be a good time.
Oh, that would certainly be my honor. Oh, my gosh. You put a big smile on my face with that one.
Oh.
Wow. So, Ellen, you are the author of Feeding the Hungry Ghost, Life, Faith, and What to Eat for Dinner. And the front of the book says, Ellen Kanner goes far beyond the physiological function of food in this charming book. Fun, well-written, and full of information, it is an ode to veganism and a new way of connecting with the seasons. And that's Jacques Pepin. Let me try my French. Pepin? Author of Essential Pepin. And so that is very well put. It is a fun book. It is very well written, and it is chock full of information. So I'm looking forward to finishing the rest of the book, trying out some of the recipes, and letting folks know how it goes. I've looked ahead. I see the, it's the peanut soup, sweet potato and peanut soup.
Oh, right. There's like an African-American sweet potato and black-eyed pea stew. It is so, so good.
Oh, my gosh. All right. So that one is coming up very soon because this is the season for soups for me, where I start to love to make them. So I thank you for writing this book and for providing me with wonderful recipes. And I hope folks will pick up the book and read more. Ellen, I want to thank you so much for sharing with us about Feeding the Hungry Ghost and just sharing your wit and your wisdom. You've been phenomenal.
Oh,
and
thank you.
Oh, you're most welcome. I'd like to invite listeners to tune in again next month on the second Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for more Mind, Body, and Soul Food. And we will have feng shui expert and author Tess Whitehurst join us. And she'll share insights on her new book, Magical Fashionista. Magical Fashionista. And so since I'm obsessed with things like Project Runway and shows like that, I like those reality shows that deal with fashion and design and things like that. I know it's going to be delicious once you combine that with a wonderful metaphysical point of view. I'd like to also invite folks to visit my website, mindbodyandspiritworks.com, or contact me, Tanya Parker, at tanya@mindbodyandspiritworks.com for more information about my holistic healing, teaching, writing services, including my upcoming classes and events. I have a new Reiki Healing series starting in September. You can find information on my meditation CD. My Throat Chakra Women's Circle is starting back up this month. And so also we will have, continuing the show, we will have Jenny Robertson, who is going to be speaking on the On Purpose Women's Conference that will be held in Colombia on, that's going to be at the end of the month. So I hope that you all will tune in to hear Jenny speak more on that. Ellen, do you have any final words for us?
I think less processed, more produce, and value yourselves. You can do delicious things in the kitchen, and you can do it very simply. You need to nourish yourselves. thank you for this delicious opportunity.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you so much. And now, let's see if we can shift gears a little bit. And I see that Jenny is on the line. Jenny, are you there?
I am here. Thank you.
Hi, Jenny. It's so wonderful to hear your voice.
Well, I so love listening to this show. I just love it. You know, I love everything she was talking about. So it was very timely for me.
Now,
I'm
going to
be saying less processed, more produce a lot now.
Processed, more produce.
Don't you love that?
And
I love that.
I love that. I love that. And, you know, I have to go to an aside because I have to give a shout out to your husband. Because he does important work on this planet, and I know this show was right up his alley.
I was just telling him about it. He just came upstairs, and I said, I'm listening to this show. I'll make sure he gets the replay of it so he can hear more about her.
Wonderful. So, Jenny, please share with us more about this conference that is going to be happening at the end of the month.
Oh, it's just 3 weeks away, and thank you so much for letting me be on here and talk about it, because you're also going to be there sharing your amazing gifts with everyone. Yes, yes. It's the third annual On Purpose Woman Conference coming up on September 28th and 29th in Columbia, Maryland. You can attend either one or both days, so you don't have to commit to the entire weekend. This is the third one, and the first two were just one day, and I'm trying to grow a bit and thought I would offer another option and also give more women an opportunity to come in and share all of their amazing gifts. And as you know, you were also a speaker last year, so it's just I don't even know how to best describe it. Just lots of sisterhood going on, I think, is the wouldn't you agree?
Oh,
lots
most
of sisterhood.
Definitely. Lots
and,
of sisterhood.
And just lots of talent. We have women who will be speaking on in three primary areas. One is entrepreneurship, one is wellness, and the other is personal growth and spirituality. So there will be three talks going on at all times in any of those areas, and there will be exhibitors. And then on Sunday, I've added something new, which is instead of exhibitors, we're going to be having coaching tables where some of our speakers, probably about 10 of our speakers, will have tables, and they'll be available to sit and talk one-on-one or do a little group coaching, and people can get the even more value of their expertise. So I'm really excited about that idea. What do you want me to, what do you want me to say next?
Well, you know,
I
don't
want to just sit here and babble.
You're not babbling. I'm just seeing these connections here between what Ellen was talking about and what you're doing. I mean, we are feeding these women when we show up and we share of our talents, we share of our expertise, our knowledge in some way. And it's a very sustaining experience. And I know I left out last year just feeling amazing. Because, one, it's like, wow, I got to speak at this conference with these amazing women. Like, how did I get to this point? That was one. But, wow, I can't wait to go home and implement some of what I've learned because I was nourished throughout the course of that one day. And now you have 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
2 days worth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
Can you share with us some of these, I'm going to call them chefs, some of the women who will be feeding
up,
us, who are going to the conference. Yeah, what are they cooking up?
Yes. Well, I want to go back first to something you just said, and I think mm-hmm. you're so right. It is nourishing. It is feeding. And with the work that I do over the last 15 years, women are so hungry for this work. They are so hungry for connection. They are so hungry for relevance, really, to be in places where they feel relevant and things that resonate with them. So it's just so exciting when we can do it in more of a formal way and everybody gets to show up. But I'm really especially excited that a woman who opened the conference for me 2 years ago, Claudia Carawan, who's an amazing singer-songwriter and has some of the best music, is going to be opening the conference again on Saturday. She has a song called Fearless. That should just be every woman's mantra. But she also does a few standards and gets us on our feet. I think you remember last year we had another singer and we were doing I Will Survive. Remember that? So it's a great, music is just a great way to start anything like that. Just gets us all pumped up and excited.
Yes. I agree. I agree.
And so that'll be like the opening of the conference. I'm going to say a few words. And then Sylvia Henderson, who I believe you know, who is the Idea Success Network. Sylvia helps women and men. She helps them take the ideas, the wonderful ideas they have, and start the implementation process. She's going to be sharing a process in the opening keynote to help the women there get the maximum value from spending the day there. So, because, you know, often we'll go to these things, we'll get all these wonderful ideas, we'll be, like you said, we'll be pumped up, we'll be ready to go home and implement, and then if we don't have the support or we don't have any focus, it'll just be another nice thing that we did, and that nice binder with all those resources will go up on the shelf and we'll never pull it out again. So Sylvie's going to be sharing some things that the women can use right then to kind of choose how they're going to do the conference that day. And this is something new that she's just implemented. So I'm really excited that she tried it at a really large conference a couple of months ago, and it was very well received. So I'm really excited that we can have her doing that. Yes. And we have, as I said, we have people talking about, women talking about different areas of entrepreneurship. One of them is going to be, you know, how do you actually use Facebook for your business, and how do you get past some of your issues with it? Because, you know, Facebook can bring up issues, kind of like junior high school, can't it?
Yes, it can. I've noticed that. Yes. It can be a very powerful tool, but I think many of us out there, we don't quite know how to fully implement it to our best advantage.
Right.
So that workshop sounds ideal.
To all of it, yes. And so that'll be, I think, a really valuable one for those women who want to learn how to use that for their business. There's also going to be a couple of Sylvia Henderson, again, is going to do a talk on communicating your ideas. Using a deck of playing cards, she's going to help you determine how you communicate. If you have an idea that you need to communicate to get action on, how do you do that? There's going to be, I'm going to just mix them all up because they're just,
okay.
Andrea Hyland's going to be doing a one I'm really looking forward to called Sexuality, Money, and Power. Are those hot buttons or what?
Most definitely.
If we just threw food in there, we'd have like a four of the probably biggest issues women have, you know, sexuality, money, power, and food. And Marlena Kelly will be doing a wonderful talk. I don't know if you've heard Marlena speak, but she is like a marketing guru, and she'll be talking You've got to try to check her out.
Well, we've been chatting on Facebook about it. I'm excited to hear her speak.
Oh, good. Yes. She'll be talking about how to increase your credibility, your community, and your cash flow, because, you know, sometimes the cash flow is the thing that we forget about, and we let that kind of slide to the end, and we're all about doing everything else but not looking at the money. And then Marlena and I are going to do a workshop together on Sunday on networking, because we both are really good at it, and we know some things, and so we're going to call it Learning from the Masters, Power Networking. So I'm excited about that also.
I love that, Jenny. Step into your power there, because you are the networking guru for sure. And
well, thank you. Thank you. There's going to be a few topics on areas where women tend to hold themselves back. One is called Reclaiming Your Tiara. How do you, you know, shine a light on yourself and step in and actually claim your unique power? How do you bring your gifts more fully into the world? Claudette Gadsden-Roback will be talking about just living your best life. How secure are your roots is another one. You know, what do you have that actually holds you, you know, grounded? What keeps you grounded? What do you fall back on when you hit those times? You know, what have you built up, I guess, to be able to fall back on when you need it? Let me see. I'm looking here. We do have a woman also who specializes in the brain, and she'll be talking about how you can change your brain and change your life. So how you can actually, you know, reverse some of the things that are going on in the brain and have your brain work a little better for you as an individual.
That sounds intriguing.
I think so, too. Betty Ann Leesburg-Lang, who is a dialect coach, will be talking about how our body speaks to our audience even before we open our mouth. How we, if we do presentations, we walk up to the front of the room, what we're saying to our audience before we speak the first word. And it's some things that we're just not even conscious of, very subtle things, mm-hmm. but they send a very unconscious message to our audience, and they can start to form maybe not great opinions about us, you know, without
right.
our even knowing
oh.
it. So I think that'll be a nice new topic. I've
got
a new person this year, Chelsea Logan. Do you happen to know her? I think she's my
Chelsea is a friend
Northern
of mine.
Virginia.
She's a former. Yeah, she was on our January show with her sister.
Oh, wonderful.
Very, very powerful and talented young woman.
I have not met her, but I was impressed with her credentials, and she'll be speaking on the energetics of debt, which I thought was a very cool topic. You know, we don't want to do anything at this conference that's real mainstream. We want to kind of push the envelope just a little bit, and it's not going to be the things that you hear at every conference. Or it may be a topic that you hear, but we're going to put a twist on it. We're going to let you go a little deeper with it. And then there's another one, I love this title, called Trust Your Crazy Ideas.
That is a good one.
Because don't we all have some of those? And tell everybody what
yes.
you're going to be talking about, Tanya.
I will be talking about transform your rut stories to river stories and step into the flow. A lot of times we get stuck in these stories that we repeat to ourselves over and over again, and not just to ourselves, but to the world at large, everyone who will listen. And because we speak them into existence and we continue and perpetuate them, it's not as if that things haven't happened to us, but if we really want to move on from them and to get the good that's out there for us, we need to shift our way of looking at them and speaking about them and seeing the meaning behind them so that we can step into the flow of life and move forward.
I love that. Because don't you find also that it's so unconscious usually? We've gotten into such a habit
yes.
about it that we don't even know we're doing it anymore. And so we need somebody
and that's
to kind of shine a light in front
of us. Shine that light. Oh,
yes.
Wow. We said it at the same time. Yes. Shine the light on it.
Yes.
I love that when that happens.
Yes. I've got somebody coming who's a real expert in nonprofits, and she'll be talking about to those women who are thinking of starting a nonprofit. Has this been an idea that's been bumping around in your head? Not so much. I think she's going to go into some of the hows, but really more of the deciding if that's really the best thing for you. Is a nonprofit, you know, is that actually the best format? Can you do it? Mm-hmm. Can you do your work in a different way? So I think that's going to be a nice added addition to this conference also.
Wow.
And then for the career women out there, Carolyn Owens will be doing a talk called Moving On Up, Why Nice Girls Don't Get the Corner Office.
Oh, these titles are wonderful.
Aren't they wonderful? I'm so excited.
Yes.
If I had everything done, I'd want it to be tomorrow, you know, but I've still got things to do. So I'm happy to wait another 3 weeks to have that done. But you want me to tell everybody how to get information and everything on
Most
the conference?
Most definitely. There's a wonderful lineup, and I know some folks are intrigued and would ladies, because it is
yes.
a woman.
It is
a conference for women.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. So please let folks know how they can register for the conference and find out more information.
Okay, there is a special website just for the conference called onpurposewomanconference.com. And once they go on there, they can check out all the speakers. They can read descriptions, detailed descriptions of all the talks, all the presentations. They can see bios of all the speakers and see how talented all these women are and look at the schedule for the 2 days, decide if they want to attend one or both, and then they can go right on the registration page and pay with PayPal.
Wonderful.
And I did
as
mention
simple as that.
It's as simple as that. I did mention our opening singer on Saturday. I don't want to forget that we have another amazing singer on Sunday, Sherry Robbins, who is also known as the Funky Diva. So she will be knocking our socks off with some great music. She's actually written 2 songs just for my conference.
Oh, I
is
am
that
looking
not the
forward
thing?
To hearing her. Yes, that is
One,
the coolest
yeah.
thing.
I haven't
You're
heard them. I'll be
songs
hearing them
now.
With everybody else. I'm inspiring songs. One is called
yes.
Sisters, and the other one is called On Purpose Woman. And I will not hear, I'll hear them when everybody else does, but just the titles
uh-huh.
have me really excited. So very happy about that. So it is going to be jam-packed, and everything is included, breakfast, lunch, both days, anything anybody wants to do that day. It's just all included. A great gift bag. The first 150 women get a wonderful gift bag, and it's not one of those just little papery gift bags. It's a wonderful shoulder bag with that you can use over and over and over again. So our bag sponsor is Sylvia Henderson. She'll be providing those again for us this year. So anything else?
Wow.
Can I leave anything out?
Well, I don't think so. This is a conference that's it's chock full of. This is a chock full of conference. Yeah. No, thank you so much for sharing with us about the On Purpose Woman Conference to be held September 28th and 29th.
Mm-hmm.
At the, tell us again,
Homewood
Suites
by Hilton in Columbia.
By Hilton. Okay, wonderful.
And it's from, it starts at roughly breakfast and registration starts at 8 o'clock. Of course, people can arrive whenever they want. And then it goes till 6 on Saturday until 5 on Sunday. And again, you can attend either or both days. It's up to you. And the hotel has a great rate on rooms if anybody wants to take a weekend and get some of your girlfriends together and just have a girls' night out or a girls' weekend out. You can't beat the rates for their suites there. They're really good.
Okay, wonderful. Well, Jenny, thank you so much. First, we had Ellen Canner sharing her wit and wisdom as she talked about her book, Feeding the Hungry Ghost. And now you have shared wonderful information about how so many women will be fed with this sustaining information at
Absolutely.
The On Purpose Woman Conference. Well, I'd like to leave folks with some leftovers. Here's some mind, body, and soul food to go from Ellen Canner's book, Feeding the Hungry Ghost. Feeding that deeper hunger and serving the world, start with what you serve for dinner. It means thinking beyond what's on your plate. It means seeing food as something that strokes the soul as it stokes the body. Food as connection to and communion with the earth and each other. That's asking a lot of dinner. Get used to it. Asking a lot is what I do. So, listeners, may your soul be stroked and your body be stoked until you can dine with us again at the Mind, Body, and Soul Food Table. We hope to hear you next time.
1, 2, here I go. Well, I'm a hungry woman. Feed me like I want to be fed. Give it to me, baby. I'm a hungry woman.